All right. We should be good to go now. We got it recorded. Hopefully everybody can hear me. Tana, once again, if you can hear me, press the star 6 button and let me know. If not, then we'll figure it out.
I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. All right. So we should be good to go now. It's being recorded. I want to welcome everybody out to our Monday morning coaching call. This is just what we need to get us rolling and out of bed for the week so that we can get moving and make it happen this week. So if you guys got the email on Friday, and I'm sure everybody did, otherwise you wouldn't be listening right now, it basically there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about, and these topics came up. I was talking to an agent on, Thursday or Friday, and he asked this question. This is the second time I've had this question in the last month. So I've had two people ask me in the last month, how do you deal with the call boxes? Okay. So for those of you who live kind of in the inner city-ish area, or if you've ever worked in an apartment complex or a senior building, you come across these call boxes. And they're outside of the building. You have to get buzzed in, and they can be very, very frustrating because you can't talk to a person face-to-face. You have to talk to them via this call box. And it's a little bit outside of the norm. Sometimes it throws us off of our game, but they're really easy to get past if you just simply know what to say and how to say it. So that's what we're going to cover this morning. One is how to get past the call box. And then the other one is how to get somebody to answer the door when you know that they're home, but they just, for whatever reason, they're not answering the door. So both of them are very simple. In fact, they're so simple that it's probably only going to take us 5 minutes to discuss it. But I also wanted to talk about getting into doors in general. And so I think that's going to help us out. One of the big things I've noticed most agents, new agents say is, Cody, if I can just get in the door, it's probably a sale. And that is entirely true. When you're first starting out, if that's the case, that's the case. If you're getting in, it's probably a sale. What you'll notice is the longer you do this, the better you get at getting into doors, you're going to notice that number shift just a little bit to where you can get in to a lot more doors and you're closing about half of the people that you sit down with. So where you're batting about 100% on your presentations, that's probably going to reduce down to about 50%, and that is directly related to how good you are at getting in the door. Now, one of the things I want to mention at getting in the door is you don't want to give them too much information on the doorstep, because if you do, then they have the right to tell you yes or no while you're standing at the door. So my whole goal is when I'm talking to them at the door, I knock on their door and I'm talking to them, is to give them as little information as I can give them before they let me into their house to sit down and discuss it with them. That way we can get comfortable. I can ask them questions. They're in an education type of a setting where, you know, they're open, they'll discuss. Whereas on the doorstep, it's not that you can't make a sale on the doorstep. You can. We've done it lots of times. But it is a lot easier, a lot more comfortable if you can get in and sit down with them. So first things first, let's talk about these call boxes. So you go up to the apartment complex. They're more prevalent in cities than they are in rural areas. So and in California, when I worked there for five or six years. They're very, very common out there because of, you know, crime and some of the things like that. They've got call boxes everywhere, especially in the cities and in the apartments. So here's the script that you want to use, okay? You call, you ring it, you say, and let's say her name's Gladys. You just say, Gladys, it's Cody. I'm just downstairs. I was getting back to you on that card you mailed in. I just dropped by to explain it. It takes about 10 minutes or so. And that's it. That's all I'll say. And I'm telling you, half of the time I won't even get through that whole sentence before they're buzzing me through the door. The key phrase is, Gladys, I'm just downstairs, just like that, just downstairs. You're saying as a matter of fact. You don't want to sound like a salesman. You want to sound like, hey, I'm somebody who has business here, or sound like you know them. Okay? Talk in a tone in which you know that person. That way you don't sound like a salesman. So you say, Gladys, yes, this is Cody. I'm just downstairs. I was getting back with you on that card you had mailed in just takes about 10 minutes. And if they rebuttal with, well, what card are you talking about? I'll just go to the card. I'll say, hey, it's that card. It's that supplement for the Social Security Death Benefits Program, the final expense program. I just drop by to explain it. It takes about 10 minutes. That's it. So you don't sound salesy, and you have business there because you got the card. And you also want to avoid getting into any type of a discussion of, oh, I didn't mail that, or yes, I did, or, you know, things like that. Because most of the time you'll lose. If you get in an argument about the card, you're going to lose the argument. So what I typically say is you try to keep it conversational. Try to keep it, like I said, like you're talking to your mother or like you're talking to your aunt. Okay? So Cody, or let's see, you would say Gladys, yes. I was getting back with you on that card you had mailed in. I'm just downstairs first. You want to say that. Cody, I'm just downstairs. I was getting back with you on that card you had mailed in. It takes about 10 minutes or so. Well, what is it? What card are you talking about? It's that card you mailed in. It's that supplement for the Social Security Death Benefits Program for the final expenses. I just dropped by to explain it real quick. I don't remember sending any card. What card are you talking about? Oh, Gladys, it's a card. You filled it out a couple of days ago or about a week or so back. It's got your name, date of birth. I'm holding it right here. When I see you, I can just show it to you. That way, hopefully, it'll jog your memory. And so it's not confrontational. Stepping away from the script just for a second. It's not confrontational. We're not getting into a contest of did I mail the card or did she not mail the card or whatever it is. You want to avoid those. Just informational. You mailed the card. I'm here to explain it. That's it. Okay? So that covers a lockbox. So this week on your next lockbox, try that and see what happens. And the key phrase, like I said, is Gladys. Yes, it's Cody. I'm just downstairs. Half the time, as soon as they hear that, boom, they buzz you in. So try that this week. Okay, that's the first thing. Okay? Now, the second thing I wanted to discuss was, what the heck was it? That's what it was. How to get somebody to answer the door when you know that they are home, okay? And this happens a lot. You know, we get these cards. We're talking to seniors. A lot of time they're single senior, you know, women, and sometimes they get uncomfortable when, you know, a big, tall guy who's by himself is knocking on their door and they don't know him. So it can get to be kind of nerve-wracking for a senior citizen, male or female, when they run into this situation. So what we're doing, and I want to kind of bring this into a whole how you approach the house, what you look like, things like that. You want to be as unassuming as possible. But when you run into a house, okay, you want to make sure that you're dressed professionally but not overdressed. You want to leave the briefcase in your car. Carry like a binder, a stack of paper, something, okay? You don't want to look like a salesman. That's the bottom line. If I could take one sentence to explain this whole thing, you do not want to look like a salesman. Now, what does a salesman look like? They've got the briefcase. They've got the suit. They've got the sunglasses on their head. They've got the pinky ring on their finger. These are all the stereotypes that are stereotypes for a reason. Is because a lot of people do this. You want to avoid all of them, okay? So avoid the pinky ring, all right? I don't know who wears a pinky ring, but if you do, shame on you. Take it off. So yeah, avoid the pinky ring, okay? Your hair, I prefer like a military type of a cut. That seems to work for me. People trust me more when I wear that type of a haircut. I've noticed, or I perceive, and if I perceive it, then it's true. So that's the one thing. During the summer, I'll wear shorts. I'll wear shorts and a polo shirt. I know in this industry, it's kind of a taboo. Everybody thinks you need to wear slacks. Everybody goes within their comfort level. If you're uncomfortable wearing shorts, don't wear shorts. Wear slacks. But please don't wear a shirt and a tie in a suit when it's 110 degrees outside. Whatever you do, you're just going to look like an idiot. So don't do that. All right. Now, more important than how you look is how you act. So when you're on the doors and you come up to the house, you just want to be casual. You don't want to be sitting there glaring. I mean, you can look at the house, kind of look at the house and wave at it, be friendly. Even if you don't think they're looking at you, every house I approach, I just give a friendly wave to the house. That way, if they're looking at me, then they think, oh my gosh, the guy saw me. Now I have to answer the door. So I'll give a friendly wave to the house. And when I get up there, I'll knock on the door, and then I take at least one step back. My rule is one arm length. If you can stretch your arm out forward and touch the door, you are too close to that door. You don't know these people. They don't want you all in their face and things like that. So take a step back, okay, at least one arm length, and then even turn away from the door if you want. Turn away, turn to the side, whatever you want, but do not be closer than one arm length, okay? That's the first thing. If you are tall, which I am, I'm almost 6 foot two. I'm 6 foot one and three quarters, and I weigh 218 pounds. I'm not a small person. So when I knock on the door, if I can, I prefer to take one step down. So I'll take a step back at least one arm length away. If I'm in a trailer park where it's a raised or, you know, it's a couple of steps up to the house, I'll sometimes try to take one step down so that I look shorter. It's a lot less threatening. And that individual, sometimes they feel like they have the upper hand. They're in a dominant position, and that's fine. That's what I want. I want them to feel like they're in control of the situation, even though I'm in control of the situation, okay? So one arm length, if you're a big person, take a step down if you can. I also like to do if this is, and all these are because I'm a big person. I don't think like I'm a short person because I'm a tall person. So one thing I'll also do is when I take the step down, if I can, I will lean against the handrail. I'll put my elbow on top of the handrail if it's secure, okay? And then I'll lean against it. It makes me about a half an inch shorter. It makes me look a lot more relaxed. It helps them feel relaxed. That's what I'll do. So my whole goal is just to get them to open up the door, okay? Just to talk to me and be open to the split second that I have to show them who I am. Now, the second that they open the door, okay, you know, hello, who are you? That's when I pop up, I stand up tall, I'll hand them the card. I don't wave it in their face. I'll simply hand them the card like I'd be handing them like a check, okay, like you're handing them a check, like just a piece of paper. Hand them the card, say, Gladys, you mailed this card in a little while back. I just dropped by to explain it. It takes about 10 minutes. Okay, whatever door script you're using, you want to do it. You want to be scripted. You want to know what you're saying so that you're not stumbling all over yourself looking like a babbling fool trying to get them, you know, to trust you enough to let them into your house. So if you're on the training website, there's a couple of things that a couple of door approaches that you can use. The door approach that I use is I'll hand the card. I'll say, I'm trying to get a hold of Gladys. Yes, I'm Gladys. Hi, I'm Cody. You'd mail this card in about a week and a half or so back. I just dropped by to explain it. It takes about 10 minutes. That's literally all I say. That's it. And if they say, well, what is it? Which happens a lot. They'll say, well, what is it? And I go, oh, this is that card you mailed in. It's that, you know, that supplement for the Social Security Death Benefits Program for the final expenses. It takes about 10 minutes or so. And then from there, 9 times out of 10, I'll either get in the door or they'll tell me to get lost, one of the two. Now, sometimes they'll say, oh, well, I just expected somebody to mail it to me, which happens all the time. They say, oh, yeah, you know, oh, yeah, I didn't want anybody to come by. I just wanted somebody to mail it. So this is something that you are, as an agent, going to run into all the time. So just be ready for it. Have a script. Be ready for it so that when it comes, you know what to say. So I just thought that they were going to mail it. And then at that point, I'll say, and I work so much better when I do role play. But anyways, they'll say, okay, I just thought somebody was going to mail. I go, yeah, we mailed you out the original card. It had some information on there. And from there, we have a whole bunch of different plans that we can fit people into. They're all state regulated. And so what we got to do is we got to sit down with you for just a couple of minutes and go over a couple of questions to see which plan you fall into. Takes about 10 minutes. So, I mean, you see the difference. It's not threatening. I'm not, you know, getting into a discussion over it. I'm just telling them, say, hey, you know, we got lots of different plans. And so what we got to do is ask you a couple of, you know, real quick questions to see which plan you fall into. And people are either open to that or they're not. If they're not open to it, they'll tell you to get lost and say, oh, I don't want to talk to anybody about it. And then they'll shut the door in your face. You know, but sometimes they'll say, oh, well, they'll hum and they'll hover and you can wiggle your way into the door. But just plan on that happening. They are going to ask what it's about. So be ready for an answer with that. They are going to say things like, you know, I just expected something in the mail. So be ready for that. These are all things that you're going to run into every day. It's not a secret. You just got to know what to say when they ask that. Okay? All right. Any questions on what we've covered so far? If you have a question, go ahead, unmute yourself. It's star 6 to unmute yourself if you have any questions about anything that we've covered in the first 15 minutes of the call.
Hey, Cody, you there?
Yes, I am. Saeed, right? I can hear you.
Yes, sir.
Hey, buddy.
Yes, Cody. My question to you is that I heard you say this a few times. It takes about 10 minutes. Do you leave it at that, or do you verbally ask them, can I come in? Because I've seen some YouTube videos where an agent is like, I think three times he was asking, can I come in? Can I come in? Like different occasions. Do you verbally say, can I come in? Or do you just say it takes about 10 minutes and leave it there?
I ask them if I can come in, but I do it with my body rather than my mouth. So here's the difference. So I'll say, yeah, it takes about 10 minutes. At that point, I'll kind of bow my head just a little bit and start maybe wiping my feet. Now, you can only do that once. You can't do that over and over and over again. It's like you can only say 10 minutes one time. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of vary what you're saying. You got to vary the communication you're given. So if the first time I say, it just takes about 10 minutes or so, you can do that once and get away with it. The next time I'm trying to close them on letting me get into the door, I'll have to use a variation of, you know, I'll skip all the extras for you. I've got an appointment here in just a little bit. It's not that big. You know, it just takes, you know, and then at that point, maybe I'll say it takes about 10 minutes. And so, one time for sure, two times maybe, but after that, you can't keep saying it. But as far as the can I come in, I don't say that because I let them let me in. You know, I'll either – sometimes maybe I'll put my hand on the door and just kind of take some of the pressure off of the door, or I'll wipe my feet, or I'll bow my head, or you just kind of read their body language. If their body language is telling you, yes, I'm allowing you to come in, then take the leap, make the assumption, okay, they're letting me in. And if they're not, they'll stop you. And I'll tell you what, I've been doing this, since, like I said, since 2006. I've never misread somebody, started to walk in their house and been like, whoa, what are you doing? Okay, so that's never happened. And I'm very glad, because that would be embarrassing. But so just read them, try to see what they're saying. But, you know, can I come in? I don't say it because – I say it with my actions and my attitude, and I try to read them to see if they're going to allow me to come in or not. Did that answer that question, Saeed? I don't feel like it did, but
no, I think it did answer that question. Now, one more thing I want to know, Cody, is that sometimes people are like, they're literally shocked that there's a sales rep at their house. Like, they're just shocked. Like, you know, like they're shocked at the fact that they were literally expecting something in the mail, and they're like, their eyes and their pupils like, you know, dilate, and they're like, I wasn't expecting somebody over here in person. How do you respond to that kind of behavior? Are you like, do you apologize for being there, or like, do you like, what's the right response when someone is literally shocked at the fact that a person came to their house?
Yeah, I think there's two different types of people. I think you have one which is unexpected, like, whoa, I didn't expect anybody to come by, you know, and that happens a lot because people don't really door knock anymore, which is why we do as well as we do when we door knock. Because nobody else really does it. I mean, you've got a few companies and groups that do door knock, but just not that many. So when somebody shows up, yes, sometimes they are like, whoa, I didn't expect that. That's one type of person. Then you have the other type of person, which is, I call it salesman meltdown, okay, where the barriers are up. No matter what you say, you could give them a gold nugget, and they would not see anything other than the salesman that's standing in front of them. So the salesman meltdown situation is tough. I say the same thing for both types of people. However, the salesman meltdown person, I don't expect anything coming out of that situation. I'll say it, and I'll act like it's like every other situation I run into, and every now and again you'll get lucky, but most of the time their salesman meltdown is more than what I can overcome. Okay? But that's another reason why it's important to be unassuming, you know, low key. That way you can try to mitigate as much of that salesman meltdown as you can. Now, the other person who's, I didn't expect anybody to come by. You know, maybe I'll say, I'm trying to think of what I say. Hang on here. Let me run through a scenario in my mind and let me see what I would say. Gladys answers the door. Oh, I didn't expect anybody to come by. You know, if they're super on the defense, if they're really on the defense, I would say something like, oh yeah, I apologize. Yeah. There's a lot of different plans that we can fit people into, and so we just got to run through a couple of real quick questions with you to see which plan you fall into. And if they're almost scared, then a lot of times I'll say, you know, we can do it inside or we can do it outside. You know, if we want to sit down out here, that's fine too. So you have to read the person. If you think that they're comfortable with you, then just go through it. If they're like super shocked, like what I think you're talking about, Saeed, they're like super shocked and like alarmed, like, oh my gosh, someone's at my door. Try and take some of the pressure off just by giving them the option. Hey, I apologize. You know, I didn't mean to shock you or anything like that. They just send us out. We got to run through a couple of real quick health questions or questions with you. Takes about 10 minutes. If you're uncomfortable, you know, we can sit outside, or if you want somebody else here, you know, something like that, we can do that too. And so I would say, to answer the question, Saeed, gauge how shocked they are. If it's just a surprise, like, oh, that's weird, okay, then just try to get in the house like you normally do. If it's a fear, like a terror, like, oh my god, then offer to, you know, discuss it outside. You know, if it's a salesman meltdown situation, I would just try to get past it, and if you can, great. If not, move on to the next one.
Okay. Cody, one more thing I've been running into, and I want to ask you this.
Sure.
Is that when you're interacting with someone for the first time, either over the phone or either by door knocking, do you think it's more respectful to address them with their last name, like Mrs. Jones or Miss, you know, whatever, Mrs. or Mrs. something like that, instead of like their first name? Hey, like, you know, what's your take on that?
All right. That's a good question. And I've toyed with a couple of different things with this. Now, as a sales industry standard, we're taught that we're supposed to say, you know, use their last name, you know, Mrs. Smith, okay? And but here's the problem. When you say Mrs. Smith, what do you sound like?
Salesperson.
A salesman. You sound just like a salesman. And our goal is to not sound like a salesman. So what I'll typically do is if it's a first-time interaction and I'm just trying to get contact with somebody, you know, I'll say I'm trying to get a hold of, you know, let's say her name is Jane Smith, okay? I'll say I'm trying to get a hold of Jane or Jane. I'll use their first name. Now, once I get past the first name and they're conversing with me, I don't say Mrs. Smith. I would say Mrs. Jane.
Okay.
So, and then some people will correct you. And I've noticed mostly with different cultures and ethnicities, they prefer to be, you know, used a different way. If you have any questions, just ask them. Say, you want me to call you Mrs. Smith or Jane or Mrs. Jane? But I'll use Mrs. or Mr. their first name, you know, Mr. Saeed or Mrs. Jane. I rarely use the last name, mainly because you sound like a salesman.
Right, and when you're knocking on the door, sometimes they'll ask loudly, "Who is this?" What do you say then?
Yes. Okay. Perfect. All right. This was okay. Going to the other part of the coaching call, which was, what do you do with somebody who you know is home, but they're not answering the door? How do you handle that situation? Okay, you handle the situation you just asked about the same way that you handle the one that where you know that they're home but they're not answering. You simply say their name, okay? So if they're not answering the door, I'll just say, you know, Jane. I'll ask it like a question, Jane. And what that communicates to them is, okay, he's not a salesman because he knows my name. If he was a door-to-door salesman, he wouldn't know my name. He's not a murderer, okay? He's not going to come in my house and you know, steal all my stuff and leave me for dead, okay? Because he knows my name, you get credibility instantly when you use their name. So if you think that they're home, but they're not answering, just say their name. Jane, Tom, you know, Tom, hello, Tom, hello, Jane, you know, something like that. And a lot of times, somebody, you've been to their house 5-6 times, and you all of a sudden say their name, and boom, the door pops right open. It's like, holy crap, I should have done that the first time. So you'll notice that. Now, in your situation where they're speaking through the door, who is it? I'll do the same thing. I'll say, Jane. Because when they're talking to you through the door, what are they really asking you? They're asking, are you a murderer or are you a door-to-door salesman? Okay. When you answer them by saying their name, you're giving answers to both of those questions. I'm not a door-to-door salesman because I know your name. I'm not a murderer because I know your name. Mm-hmm. Now, most of the time that will work. Sometimes it doesn't. So sometimes, let's say they say, you know, who is it? I'll say, Jane. Yes. Who are you? I'll say, and then at that point, it's not going to work. You got to actually tell them who you are. So at that point, I'll say, Jane, it's Cody. you had mailed this card in. I just dropped by to explain it. And did you see how I did it quietly? Now, I don't yell it through the door because then that gives them the answer through the door. My whole goal is to get them to open the door and look at the freaking card. So I'll say it not whisper, but I won't do it loudly either because my goal is for them to kind of hear me, but just enough to open the door. So I'll say it if I use the volume of Jane. Yes, who is it? I say, yes, this is Cody. You had mailed that card in. You see how it's just a few decibels lower? That way, my goal is to get them to open the door. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Thank you, Cody.
Hey, you're welcome. Any other questions? If you have another question, *6, and then that'll kick you on so we can get you.
Cody, it's Chris.
Hey, Chris, how you doing this morning?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Great call so far. Just wondering, like, what percentage would you say of the people you're door knocking just don't want to be bothered? You know, there's a word you use for them. They're scared.
Salesman meltdown?
Right, exactly. What percentage is that, would you say, of the people?
About 50. If you're working leads, it's about 50%.
Okay.
So let's say you're working between 20 and 30 leads a week, which if you're only working leads, that's how many you should be working. To make a career of this and to do a good job, you know, to get to the big money, to be producing the, you know, $125,000 to $150,000 a year in issued and paid premium, you got to be working between 20 to 30 leads a week. That should be your goal. Okay. Now, let's say you're working 30 leads a week. Of those 30 leads that you're working, you knock on all 30 doors, you're probably going to have roughly, I'd say probably 10% of those people are not going to be home. You can't ever catch them. You'll never catch them. And who knows why? I don't know why. So you have 10% of those that you never catch, but I still figure those into the numbers too. So you figure that percentage is just breakage. And then you've got the other half, the rest of that half, which are people who you knock on their door. I didn't want a salesman, door slams. Or, you tell them, hey, it's a supplement for the Social Security Death Benefits Program. What is this? It's for the card you mailed in. Yeah, but what is it? Ma'am, you mailed in a card. You wanted some information on this burial policy. It's like a life insurance plan. I've already got life insurance, door slams, okay? You know, people like that, people who just, no matter what you do, they're not going to let you in the door. It's about 50%. Now, that leaves you with 50% of the people that you get in and sit down with. So of 30 leads you work, 15 will tell you to get lost. You've got 15 people who you'll be able to present to. Of those 15 people that you go in and you sit down with, you should close about 7 apps off of those, off of that remaining 15 sit-downs. Okay? So 50% of your total leads are going to be garbage. 50% of your sit-downs are going to be unprofitable. Typically. Now, one thing I've noticed with the door knocking, and we've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, I'm trying to get everybody to just try it. Just try it. It's so awesome. All right. You knock on the door. I've noticed that if I can go in and sit down with somebody on a list cold knock door, if I sit down with them, I'm going to close. My numbers so far have been about 75%. Okay. Of those people that I talk to, on the doors, I get in or sit down with about 75%. It's amazing, and I don't understand it. It does not make any sense to me whatsoever. I'm just reporting the numbers. Now, we'll see over a longer test period. I've been doing this about 2-3 weeks. Over a longer test period, maybe the numbers will equal out better. But I've noticed with the list knocking, I get into a higher percentage of the doors, and I also close a higher percentage of the people. And they're usually faster. So I don't know why that is, but that's how it's been the last 3 weeks. I'll keep letting you guys know how it all works, okay? Did that answer that question, Chris?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. The people on the list, and thank you. Thanks for answering. The people on the list, those are people who did not return a mailer, right, but who are male? Is that correct?
Correct. So I pay for a 4,000 mail piece drop. Of the 4,000 mail piece drop, I'm going to get back maybe 40 to 80 leads, if I'm lucky, okay, 40 to 80. So the list or the list I'm knocking are the people who did not respond for whatever reason.
I'm just throwing this out there, but I'm speculating that maybe one of the reasons that the percentage is higher is because those people don't typically send the card back. And because I've noticed on, you know, some of these people who send cards back, it's kind of, you know, they do it on a regular basis, I guess, maybe.
Absolutely.
So that could be a reason.
I agree. I think that's why. I think it's because this is a demographic or a group of people who are not prone to mailing back the card, but are prone to buying, or they need it, or they haven't thought about it. So the people who are always mailing back the cards, it's the same people that you, me, Tom, Dick, and Harry up the road are all selling Final Expense. We're all mailing to the same people, and the same people are shopping all the same companies. That's the 10th card they've mailed in. You're the fifth guy they've seen this week. And so I think when you go outside of that and you work with people who don't think it's necessary yet, but when you sit down, you can show them that it is, or they've just been looking for a policy that has day one coverage because everything that they get is through the mail and they think all policies are 2-year graded. I don't know, but I think that's why, to be honest with you.
The Final Expense novices or virgins.
Yes, exactly. They need to be shown the way of Final Expense. That's correct. I would agree with that.
Thanks, Cody.
Okay. Hey, no problem. Any other questions we've run into? Anything about getting into doors? Maybe how you should act, appearance, scripts, anything like that? Anything else we can think of? If not, we can go ahead and close the call. We're sitting at about 30 minutes on the call. We try and keep them 30 minutes or less if we can. But any last-minute questions?
Cody, my question is that
maybe appearance?
Go ahead.
Let's see here. Let's go with Saeed. Let's go Saeed first, and then we'll go back to Chris, if I got those voices right.
Yes. Cody, my question is that every single week, how many mail are you dropping? Like 2,000? What's the mail drop per week?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you what. The last month, it has not been that much. I think for the last month, I dropped 4,000 mail pieces a month and a half ago. I got a bad return on these. I probably got 30 leads back maybe, which is not good for my area. I usually get higher than that, but I got 30 leads back. I've maybe worked 10 leads, 10 of the 30. But my premium has not suffered. I've still sold just as much every week as I normally do, but my lead cost is significantly lower.
No, but in general, if someone was not like random door knocking, what would you advise to, like, you know, an agent who wants to make six figures, like per month, how many drops should he be doing?
If you're only working leads, you need to drop between 5,000 and 10,000 mail pieces a month.
Okay, between 5,000 and 10,000 a month.
Yep. Here's how I get that number. If you're working 25 leads a week, okay. Let's go back. Let's say you drop 10,000 mail pieces. A 1% response on 10,000 mail pieces is going to be 100 leads, okay? 100 leads, if you're working 25 leads a week, which is what you should be working, will last you 4 weeks or a month. So your goal as an agent, if you're only working leads, is to always have an inventory of 100 leads at any given time. Here's why. Because if I call the mail house and I say, XYZ company, I need to do a lead drop. I need 10,000 mail pieces. How long does it take for those mail pieces to come back? Answer is anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks. I've seen it take as little as, you know, 10 days. I've seen it take as long as 5 weeks. So if you always have an inventory of 100 leads, and on average it's you know, 3 weeks-ish around there, okay? So if you always have an inventory of 100 leads, you're never going to run out of leads. You'll have 25 people to visit every week. Of those 25 leads, 12 are garbage, 12 or 13 are garbage, I mean, and then you've got 12 or 13, which are actual sit-downs. If you're closing 50%, you should close anywhere from 5 to 6 apps a week. If your average app is $50 in premium, that's, you know, 5 sales. Let's see, $50 in premium is 600, 6 times 5 is 3,000 in premium. You know, so you can close 3,000 in premium every single week off of 25 leads. If
right.
You religiously drop that many.
How often do you rotate zip codes?
You don't want to do a zip code more than once a quarter.
Okay, I got
it. So once a quarter. And this was different. You know, 10 years ago, it was different because you could drop them more frequently. But now with the industry as it is, you're competing with, you know, two other or more final expense guys in that same area. So you want to do it about once a quarter. They're not doing it more than once a quarter. That way, you know, there's it's not oversaturated. But sometimes, you know, I've noticed a drop in the amount of mail return over the last, you know, 6-7 years. There's been a drastic reduction. But that's what's going to keep, you know, people who are hardworking, who are not afraid to knock doors, that's what's going to keep us in business and keep us doing well because we don't have call reluctance. If you've got call reluctance in this business, it's really hard to make it. You just got to get over it. So, yeah.
Right. Cody, one last final question for you.
Sure.
If you personally deliver the policy instead of the company sending it in the mail, do you think it'll help in referrals and persistency? Like, would it build a relationship? If you personally go, because, I mean, recently I've been doing that, and I've been getting small amount of referrals.
Yeah. So there, to answer the question, what I do and what I should do are two different things. You should deliver the policy, okay? I typically have the customer or the company just mail it directly to the customer. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to tell you about a guy I know out of California. He's amazing, amazing. He works 10 leads a week. That's it. Doesn't work any list knocking or anything like that. He gets all of his premium. Okay, this is his process. He sells the policy. As soon as the policy is issued, he's watching it every morning. As soon as it's issued, he calls up the customer and says, "Hey, Gladys, I got great news. You qualified for the policy." She says, "Oh, great. That's wonderful." And he says, "Hey, Gladys, you know what that means?" "What does that mean?" He says, "That means you can get as much insurance as you want. So you can get up to the maximum if you want. You know, right now we've got you at the $5,000. I'm going to deliver your policy. As soon as they mail the policy to me, I'm going to bring it by your house and I can show it to you. And just know between now and then, if you want to increase it, you're qualified for the maximum if you want." And so a lot of times they'll just say, "Oh yeah, well, how much is the $10,000? You say, "Oh, the $10,000 is 54. How much is the 12? The 12,000 is 62. Say, "Well, let's do the six. I'm qualified for it." And so it's an upsell.
But isn't he going over the pricing at the house or no?
It depends. Okay. If he's on the phone and the person shows interest at the time, he'll try to increase them over the phone when he calls to let them know that they qualified. But every situation is going to be a little bit different. You want to read the person. Okay. If you think it's going to be more beneficial to wait till you're sitting down with them, wait till you're sitting down. Okay. But what he does is when he gets the policy, he delivers it to their house and says, "Here's the policy. We've got you at this amount. You know, you qualified up to the maximum." And then he'll sit down, go over the policy with them and just say, "Hey, Glass, just so you know, if you want to go with the $10,000, it's only $12 more per month." And he gets a very large percentage of his business from upselling existing customers, okay, who had just got the policy, as well as referrals. So when you go back to the house and you deliver the policy, you can also say, "Hey, Glass, we got you taken care of. You know, who do you know that has diabetes like you do? You know, do you know anybody else who has diabetes? Or, you know, who in your church group? Who? What of your neighbors? What of your family?" You know, pick whatever specific group you want to ask about and see if you can get some referrals out of the deal, which you will. If you ask, you'll get referrals. Not from every person, maybe not even from most, but there are people out there who know other people who want insurance. They just don't know where to get it.
Thank you, Cody.
Yeah, you're welcome, Saeed. That's actually a great question, Saeed. Appreciate that. And that's, like I said, what I should do and what I do in this case are two different things. This guy makes a killing. If you're a lazy agent in this aspect, you're going to do what I do, which is just have the company mail it, which I know I'm leaving money on the table. And I need to start doing it. I mean, quite frankly, yes, I should start doing it. And I always say to myself, "Oh, I need to start delivering policies," but I just don't do it. So, yeah, I can definitely do better.
The delivering the policy, Cody, that's really the most opportune time to ask for the referral, correct?
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Because by then, because by then you've been successful in getting them a policy and, you know, asking. Because what I've been doing is I have not been delivering the policies. I've been just, you know, sending them or having them mailed directly to the client. But and I've been asking for the referral at the appointment, but that's really the wrong time to do it because they haven't even been issued a policy yet. So it's unproven whether or not I can deliver for them.
Sure. And here's the other thing, too. Like, as I'm thinking here, thinking why I don't deliver the policy, I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, some you do have to track them down again, which is sometimes frustrating.
Busy.
Yeah, because they're busy, I'm busy, and you have to track them down a second time. But if you can go back, and here's the other thing, too. My friend, his name is Steve, who does this, and he sells a lot. I mean, he'll do 150 a year every single year he has for the last 15 years, okay? So Steve, he'll tell me, he'll say, Cody, you have to deliver the policy. Why is that, Cody? And I'll say, I don't know, Steve, why? He goes, is the mailman going to save it if they want to cancel? No. Can you save it if they want to cancel? A lot of, you know, if they're having second thoughts or they don't know if they wanted it or you had to use a 30-day close on them, okay, the best person to go back to solidify that sale is going to be you. The mailman's not going to save it, but you can. So with that being said, if you go back to deliver the policy and they say, you know, Cody, I'm glad you came by. I've had second thoughts and I think I want to cancel this. You know, with that, you're standing there. You have the best situation to overcome that objection or that issue while you're standing right there than you do any other place.
I hear you. What did you mean by the 30-day close? What does that mean?
Okay, so 30-day close, log on to the website and look at the training, but to make it simple, the 30-day close is basically if you have somebody who says, oh, I want to think about it, or, you know, oh, I don't know, I need to talk to my kids. My favorite close is the 30-day close. And basically how it works is I just say, hey, look, Gladys, it's a state law that everybody has a 30-day right to examine the policy. What that basically means is we can apply for it, we can get you approved, you can get the policy, look at it, think about it, talk about it with your kids, whatever it is that you feel like you need to do, whatever your process is, you've got 30 days from the day that you get that policy in the mail to make a decision if you want it or if you don't want it. If you decide you want it, Gladys, it just starts, you know, on the 3rd of next month like we talked about. If you decide you don't want it, all you have to do is call me up and say, hey, Cody, hey, I guess I changed my mind. I guess I don't want this.
It's like a rescission period or a cooling off period?
Yeah. It's it is a state law. They have a right to examine the policy. Different companies have different time frames. You know, some people are 20 days. Most are 30 days. But what it does is it takes away the risk from your customer from having to commit. People don't like to commit to things. And so if you can give them an out, if they really want to do it, but they just don't want to commit to anything, then the 30-day close is perfect because they can they're just applying, okay? And I say that in air quotes, okay? They're just applying. So they apply, they get qualified. We're going to send everything in exactly as if you're going to take it, Gladys. This isn't going to start. No money today, Gladys. Okay, this isn't going to start until the 3rd of next month. Is that when your Social Security comes in? Yes. Okay, that's when most people do it. So we'll set up for the 3rd. Now, if you decide that you want it, you know, once you get the policy, it'll just start on the 3rd of the month for you. Okay, and I'll tell you, most people who apply for it and they get the policy in their hand, they realize it's a good deal, they end up sticking with it. Okay, but if you decide you don't want it, Gladys, for whatever reason, you know, you can call the company or call me and say, hey, Cody, you know, I guess I don't want this, you know, go ahead and cancel it before the money comes out, something like that.
Yeah, I like that.
It works. It works a lot. So
there's one advice I have, not a question, just advice for some agents listening on the call. As far as referrals is concerned, a lot of people, what they do, they're only asking about, like, their friends and, like, you know, neighbors and stuff like that. But lately, I've been getting referrals in the family for, like, younger people, like grandkids and kids, and we've got some carriers in UHL and Monumental who have very economical rates for younger people. So just a thought, you know, keep in mind that a lot of people want life insurance for their kids and grandkids, and we never really think of that. So
it's very true. Very true. And, you know, and some of the carriers too, like if you say, you know, who of your friends have grandkids? You know, we've got one carrier right now who is blowing it up and we're really starting to like him. They have a grandchild rider And what you can do is all the way up to, no matter what the age is of the insured, okay, all the way up to age 85, if they want to add on, they can add on up to 20 grandkids. It's like $1.04 for 5,000. It's like $1 for for 5,000 coverage. They can add up to an equal amount of insurance as the insured, and they can cover as many grandkids as they want, up to 20 kids. And so that's huge because grandpa and grandma can get a policy on themselves. They can get one on the kids. So going back to the referral part is, you know, hey, do you have any grandkids? You know, do you have any sons or daughters? Yes, my son. Well, how many kids do they have? They got 5 kids. Okay, well, you know, you can talk about that as a referral as well. So very good. Thanks a lot, Saeed. Any other
Cody,
what do you
tell people? Like, a lot of people are leery about taking a policy out on a kid. What do you tell them? It's just like a savings account, forced savings, you sell the cash value?
No, I don't. And lately I've been really gearing everything towards the grandchild rider, okay? So what's nice
but
about
even,
the...
But oh, even sorry. A rider, you know what I mean? Like even selling the idea of, hey, I've got insurance on a kid, you know, a lot of people are turned off by that.
Yeah, they might be, but unfortunately, you know, my kid or your kid or somebody's kid is not exempt from, you know, accidents. I mean, it's reality. We all know somebody who's lost a child, and a funeral for a child is really no less expensive than a regular funeral. And it's a tough pill to swallow. You know, I've got 3 kids of my own and I don't like talking about it, but that's why I don't talk about it that much. I just say, I've got insurance on all 3 of my kids. If something happens, they're good to go as far as a funeral is concerned. But, you know, with grandpa and grandma, what's nice about some of these riders that you can add on these policies is that the parents don't even have to know about it. So for example, if we have a policy on Jane Smith, Jane Smith has 3 grandkids that are between the ages of 15 days and 15 years old. Jane Smith can write a $5,000 policy on all 3 kids, and it's going to cost her $3.12 a month. The kids don't have to know about it. Mom and dad don't have to know about it. All they need is a name and a date of birth, and that's it. So grandpa and grandma can get a policy on all their grandkids. The kids don't have to know about it. That way it's not an awkward conversation, okay? But if something happens, grandpa and grandma are heroes because they can write a check for $5,000 or $10,000 to cover the funeral. You know, God forbid, should there be one, grandpa and grandma can have it covered. And it's only going to cost them, you know, $1.04 per kid. So that's huge. Now, if you have a different situation, and that also works well, too, compared to like the Gerber cash value policies for the grandkids. However much those are per month, I don't know how much they are. I think I forget how much they are. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But a lot of times, too, those riders are a better deal than what they're getting through a cash value policy on another grandkid. You know, they can get twice as much coverage for half as much money. It's good till they turn 25 years old, at which point they can convert it to their own insurance, and grandpa and grandma didn't pay all that money. The other thing about it, too, is if grandpa and grandma dies, the policy on all the grandkids become paid up. They're paid up policies all the way until the kids turn 25, which is huge.
Yeah. Okay.
So I guess to answer your question, Chris, is if you think that the person's if they're going to have an uneasy feeling about discussing it with parents, put them as a rider. If you think that they're going to be okay with, you know, discussing getting their own policy on their grandkids, then, you know, write them their own separate policy, which we've got lots of companies who will do that.
Yeah, or maybe just avoid it because you don't really want to, you know, I don't know, if you get a feeling for the person, right, because you just don't want to, like, clear the deal, you know?
You don't, but I'll tell you what, if you add that grandchild rider, and I've been selling it a lot lately, if you add the grandchild rider, grandpa and grandma has insurance on themselves and on 3 grandkids, the chances of that policy lapsing are quite a bit lower. For the retention is really good. The chances of that policy lapsing are less than if it's just a policy on themselves.
Right, okay, yeah, because there's other people in the mix. I got you.
Exactly. And I don't think and one thing, too, as salesmen, we can't assume that just because it makes me uncomfortable, it makes them uncomfortable, okay? So if – you know, I've asked about the grandchild rider a couple of times, and I've had some people just say, well, come to think of it, a lot of times. I've been asking it nonstop the last 3 weeks. I'll bet most people just say either, no, they've got their own insurance. That's usually what they say. Or, you know, all the kids, I don't know what they got. They got their own insurance. I'm not going to worry about that. Or they'll say, oh, yeah, $1.04 for 5,000 coverage. I'll pay that. That's nothing.
Yeah, you know, you really don't know until you ask a question. You can't really assume what they're going to be like. Yeah.
Exactly. Perfect. Thank you for the questions. Anything else we can run by? This is a great coaching call. Where I think we've gone longer on this than we've gone on any others, and it's going well.
The only other thing I was going to ask you is about dress. Like, how do you dress? Same dress casual or?
Yeah, unassuming. You want to dress unassuming to where, you know, avoid the briefcase, avoid the sunglasses on top of your head, avoid the suit and tie if you can. You just don't want to look like a salesman. So I'll maybe wear a polo shirt and shorts, you know, maybe some white shoes. I'll lean against the handrail, things like that. I just try to be relaxed and not look like a salesman. So look at yourself in the mirror and say, do I look like a salesman? If the answer is yes, then change something.
Gordy, I have a question. It's not related to the door knocking, but I'm sorry. Can I ask?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Saeed. Sorry, Chris, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, yep. Perfect. Saeed, what were you asking?
Okay, I have a question. It's a general sales question. I'm not related to door knocking. But my question is that once in a while, I'll go to a house, and the client will say something along the lines of, how long is this going to take? And because I have to be somewhere, or how long is it? I've never made a sale when someone says how long this is going to take. So do you think they're like not good prospects to begin with when they use that line?
Maybe not, but maybe so. I think it depends. When they say how long is this going to take, tell them it takes, 10 minutes, roughly 10 minutes. My presentation, I can get through my presentation if I know I'm pressed for time. I can get through my presentation in about 6 minutes. Okay.
Cody, are you telling them in the presentation, in the initial pitch, hey, it's only going to take 10 minutes of your time, or are you not even mentioning that?
No, I usually say that. That's a big part of what I say is, it takes about 10 minutes. Okay. So, I do say that. I say it takes about 10 minutes. So now, a lot of people too, and I think the ultimate question, Saeed, is, if somebody asks about a time frame, do you hold them to it? Are they worth your time? The answer is yes. They are worth your time. I've made lots of sales from people who say, man, you got to make it fast. I've got like literally 10 minutes. And if that's the case, if I've knocked on their door 10 times and this is the first time I've caught them home, I'll take 2 minutes if I can get it. I'll get in. I'll give them the fastest. I'll boil it down to the most important stuff. You mailed this in. This is on insurance. Was that what you were looking for? Yes, I was. Great. How's your health? Good. How much coverage were you looking at getting? 10,000. Okay. Based on your health, you qualify for day one coverage. Premiums never increase. Death benefits never reduce. If you do a $10,000 plan, it's $50 a month. If you do a $12,000 plan, it's $55 a month. Which one of those do you feel like works best for you? That took all of 30 seconds, and I'm telling you, it when I'm in a real life situation, it's probably not much faster than that, maybe 2 minutes total.
Okay.
And then a lot of people, they'll just say, I'll take the 10,000. I'll write them up, use a company that doesn't require a phone interview because I don't have time for it. Okay. Write them up, do the no phone interview, sign here, I need to void a check, done. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've literally been in and out of a house within 10, 15 minutes and walked out with a check and a signed app. Happens all the time. And a lot of times too, Saeed, what you run into is they'll say, oh, I'm so busy. But you walk in and they're in their pajamas, eating cereal, watching, Montel Jordan, if that's even a show anymore, or whatever it is they watch, Jerry Springer. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they just, and then I'll get in and, when they told me, oh, I only have 10 minutes, we'll be sitting there for a half hour because she's telling me about her cat and dog. And it's an excuse. So sometimes they're legit. If they're legit, make it fast. If they look like they're out the door. And sometimes too, Saeed, it's better just to say, if they're professional and they have their head screwed on straight, just say, hey, Tom, it's a bad time. Can I swing by? Will you be back around 4 this afternoon? And if they say, yeah, sure, let's do it this afternoon, then I would just come back. If they're legitimately pressed for time and they look professional and they don't look like a deadbeat, then I'll maybe set an appointment because they'll most likely keep it. But that's rare. Usually sure. I'll just try and get in and make it fast.
Okay. Cody, I was wondering, can we do a coaching call maybe next week or whenever we have time about like rapport building?
Rapport building? Sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Let me make a note of that. Yeah, we'll do it next week. We can talk about building rapport and how to do it that way. And it's a great idea.
Thank you.
All right, anything else? Yeah, we're sitting at 1 hour. This is a great coaching call. Appreciate it, everybody. Any last-minute questions before we close?
I'm good.
All right, perfect. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for showing up today. We're going to email you access to this as well, so you can just click a link to download it if you want to re-listen to it. We covered a ton of material in this call. Appreciate all the questions. You guys are great, and let's make this happen this week. Good luck. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks.